right now, this moment this morning, is the most pressure and the loudest it's ever been around Aaron Boone. They're not going to do anything during the season. Brian Cashman and Aaron Boone have a great relationship. I think where the season ends up will determine his future, of course, but anybody who's thinking that Aaron Boone's going to get fired this morning or this week, that will not happen. He's going to get an opportunity to turn this thing around. It's got to start now. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Jim. Doing well, and I got to tell you, Friday night was unbelievable. I mean, I think this has got to be some sort of Major League Baseball record.
Yeah.
You trade for three new top-end relievers, and in three innings, they give up nine runs. That has to be like an all-time meltdown. And you know what? When the Mets went into Pittsburgh and they got basically shellacked.
Oh, yeah, and you came on the air and you were screaming and yelling, unacceptable, and then all the Mets fans were turning on you saying, Boomer, what happened? You're usually the positive guy, and you just barfed all over them.
Yeah. Well, that's how I feel if I were a Yankee fan this morning after this disastrous weekend. And I think, you know, there were a lot of bad things to point at, a lot of bad things. But maybe the most disingenuous and maybe the most inaccurate statement had to be from A-Rod. If I were playing, I'd be held accountable.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, that was almost, I almost laughed at that.
Yeah.
It was so funny because I'm like, I think he forgets just how entitled he was when he played here and when he played in the league and how they treated players back then. I would even say that I could go back to 2023. I think it was 2023. When A.J. Hinch benched Javi Baez for not realizing that there were less than two outs in a game. And he took him down to the dugout and said, you're out. I can't stand this. I can't handle this. So the point being is that going back to being held accountable, and I know that Aaron Boone has to do it a certain way. 162 games is a ton of games. It's a lot of time you're spending with each other. And there's a lot of give and take between the manager and the players. But there are certain things that you can't put up with. And you have to make examples out of people. I don't care who those people are. Now, if somebody drops a fly ball, that's a physical mistake. That's one thing. Everybody can do that. Somebody makes a throwing error, that's one thing. Everybody can do that. But when it comes down to base running or knowing how many outs there are or knowing where to throw the ball, like, you know, as we tell kids in Little League, before the ball is hit to you, you say to yourself, if it is hit to me, where am I going with it initially? Because you want to have some sort of, anticipation of what you're going to do. I mean, I think you're exactly right. I think it will all come down to how these Yankees finish the season. Now, they got, like we talked about, they got 50 games left. Out of those 50 games, 28 are against teams with losing records. And their last 13 games are versus the Baltimore Orioles, who can be a pain in the ass to them, and the Chicago White Sox.
Yep.
I mean, so if you want to look silver lining, that would be the silver lining.
And Aaron Judge is supposed to come back Tuesday.
Right, so that would be the silver lining that I would tell you. You know, they got the Twins in there. They got the White Sox in there twice. They got the Orioles in there twice. I mean, these last 50 games set up for the Yankees to finish strong. That's what I would say. But this morning, that doesn't mean anything because of this debacle and embarrassment that just took place down in Miami. I mean, it almost looked to me like the players must have gone out Saturday night. They were out Friday night, Saturday night after the games, hanging out. You know, Miami's got all the trappings of everything you want. And it just felt that way. It felt like after that loss on Friday night, which was just startling, to say the least, I just feel like it's not that they mailed it in. They just didn't feel like they competed. And when you strike out a lot, you swing at bad pitches, you make mistakes on the base pass. And somebody can sit here and try to explain to me over and over and over again what the hell Jazz Chisholm was doing. And I know exactly about, you know, this is what you got to do when you're on first base and there's a pop-up. And if you think the second baseman's going to purposely drop the ball and everything else, you know, there's no way if this ball is dropped, there is no way in the world that Jazz Chisholm's going to be standing on second base.
Right.
No way.
Of course.
No way.
Yeah, I mean.
So, I mean, this was just absolutely, completely, like, I don't want to say lazy. I don't want to say, the word I want to use is just like.
Clueless?
Yeah, I guess, like, what are you doing?
And this is the biggest frustration for a Yankee fan is the fact that it feels like this type of stuff hasn't ended since Game 5 of the World Series against the Dodgers.
And that goes back to the manager.
The manager,
and the manager
right.
can yell at the first base coach all he wants.
Yeah.
That's BS.
You know, well, he also brought Chisholm back into the clubhouse,
too. Well, that's good. That's right. good that he did that.
Right, and that's the accountability stuff that the Yankee fan wants to hear all the time. But I really think that it's, and this is why I said that the Aaron Boone stuff is louder than it's ever been, is yeah, every baseball fan, even though I don't totally agree with it, because I said back in Game 5 against the Dodgers that, you know, Gerrit Cole and Anthony Rizzo have been playing baseball since they were 5 years old or younger. They know what to do in that situation. They didn't do it. That's not Aaron Judge. That's not Aaron Boone's fault. Aaron Judge drops that ball in center field. He never drops. Aaron Boone can't tell him to make a routine play, and then he's going to do it. And if he doesn't tell him to make a routine play, he's going to drop it. That's not on Aaron Boone. However, the perception of when these guys continually to play sloppy baseball throughout two-thirds of a baseball season, and the manager never seems to criticize them.
Like he did
well,
here.
Right, but finally, after how many months of the fans asking for this, but he never says anything in these post-game news conferences because that's what the fan hears. We don't see what he's saying to the players in the office.
Guy, he's just
he
not
just defends
to do
his
that,
guys, defends his guys. So that's why the Yankee fan is so pissed off. It's like this stuff. You're as sloppy as any team in a league. You've been slipping and sliding since June, and we have a manager here that doesn't seem to care about it. So that's what the perception is.
All right. But that perception is wrong. The manager does care about it. I'm sorry. I mean, and you can call in to the Cows Come Home talking about firing him today. They're not firing him. He got a contract extension. They have 50 games left. There's a lot of baseball to be played. I just laid it out for you in terms of their schedule. They may scuffle a little bit more. And by the way, you know, this was a team that was supposed to have Gerrit Cole as their number one starter.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's out. And again, that's the reality of the league. There are a lot of teams that are dealing with injured players. And right now, their two best and highest paid players are out. They're not playing. And, you know, quite frankly, after Friday night. I mean, Friday night was just, I mean, that was just a gut punch. And that could be the game that ultimately decides the future of Aaron Boone, because that loss was inexcusable. Now, what does inexcusable mean? What does it really mean? It means that somebody's got to lose their job if things don't straighten out and if things don't start, you know, going the right way, and the way that the Yankee fan who has paid a gazillion dollars to go and see this game start playing. You got to understand, there is a financial aspect to this in a huge way. And I'm sure the brain trust over at the Yankees, they hear it, they listen to the station, they know how Yankee fans feel, and I'm sure Yankee fans are really disgusted. I'm sure they're sending emails and everything over to the Yankee brass. You know that. That's the way it works. But My thing is that the amount of mental errors that's where managers lose their jobs. And, you know, the other thing, too, I will say, when you ask a player about their manager, in this case, Aaron Boone, they all like him, and they probably like him because of the way he is publicly. They probably also understand that there's going to be very difficult conversations privately, and he's never going to bring those things public. No matter how much you, me, or the fans want it, he's just not going to do that. He's going to do what he normally does, and as deflect, support, you know, and try to get through a 162-game season without somebody, you know, wrapping a bat around his neck.
Yeah, I saw Sean Morash quote tweet another Yankee fan that said, Aaron Boone gets angrier at the questions that reporters ask him than players who make mistakes
that's
in the field.
That's not true. That's
but,
not true.
But this, what I'm saying is, this is what the Yankee fan believes, right? And this is why it's so loud. Now, will Hal Steinbrenner and Brian Cashman and everybody else react to that? No, I don't believe so, because more so than any other organization here in New York, they don't listen to the noise.
Stable.
They continue now with right or wrong. You know, whether it was Gleyber Torres for an extra year when they shouldn't have kept him here, whether it was Gary Sanchez for an extra year when they couldn't keep him. You know, all of those things.
But that's
patience, patience, patience. But, like, the patience is run out for the fan base when it comes to the manager. It's just that I'm telling you, the fact that Hal Steinbrenner and Brian Cashman, if you think that they have the same perception of the manager as the fan base has, I think it's like black and white.
And when we come on the radio after our team loses, we may bitch, we may yell, we may scream, but I like to eventually just at least present the solutions to a problem instead of whining and complaining. And not to say I don't whine and complain, but I'd like to come here and say, okay, this sucks, but this is what this team should do. And the New York Yankees are really testing me, and they're testing all of us, because I cannot sit here on Tuesday afternoon and sugarcoat the crap we saw last night, or the crap we saw on Sunday, or the crap we saw on Saturday, and Friday, I don't even know how to describe. So the Yankees are a mess right now. It's just what they are. They are in danger of falling out of a playoff spot. And last night, after I finished consuming the game, I started to think. I said, okay, what's my solution? Instead of just fanning the flames like a good troll, I want to offer a solution. And the only solution I can come up with, and it pains me to say, is that they got to try to fire the manager and spark the team. That's where I'm at. And I'm not a fire the manager guy, a fire the coach guy, but I'm being real. The guy's been here since 2018. I like him. I don't necessarily blame him for all their ills. But when you are staring at the mess that this team is, in the quicksand that they are, and quite frankly, I think they're a lot better than what their record says. I do. I think they have the talent of a team that should win in the high 90s. And so I watch this every night. I watch bullpen mismanagement. I watch bad defense. I watch head-up-your-ass baseball. And I've watched the Jazz play over and over again. The more I've watched it, the more angry I get.
Yeah.
And so the only solution I can offer you to the Yankee fans out there is the thing that you would scream at 2 a.m. when calling up Big Mac. And that is, they got to fire the manager. And Aaron, if you're listening, it ain't personal, bro. It's business. Because firing the manager sparks teams. I can sit here all day and list examples of it. So tell me where I'm wrong, Yankee fans. I'm here to offer solutions, and the only solution I can come up with at this point on August 5th is that they gotta try something different with this skipper.
I can't believe I'm gonna disagree with you, because Boone is testing my patience too, Evan. This team is beyond needing a simple spark. Calling up Brad Ausmus or whatever you're going to do from the bench and managing this team, the same problems will continue
to exist.
How do I know that? Because the reason for these problems is so beyond the manager and so organizational. First of all, let me throw this question at you. When we hear Aaron Boone speak postgame, or you know, we heard him on earlier with Talking Yanks, do you even think you're hearing the real Aaron Boone? Because the real Aaron Boone that I think is a baseball man is the one that kicks dirt, yells savages in the box, and does all that. I think Aaron Boone, unfortunately, as much as he'll never admit this, and it sounds depressing, he is a messenger boy for the Yankee organization. Unfortunately. And the message to that Yankee team and that Yankee roster is that if somebody messes up, F's up multiple times, nothing matters, nothing gets held in accountable fashion. Anthony Volpe is the prime example of this. How could Aaron Boone bench Jazz Chisholm when Anthony Volpe is allowed to start every single day and not be sent down when he throws balls in the dirt, leads the league in errors, has those prolonged slumps? How could he then do the same to Jazz Chisholm when they don't allow him to send an Anthony Volpe down? This is an organizational issue, and Aaron Boone has to answer and send the message to the organization once, and the next guy that Brian Cashman allows to manage this team is going to be given the same marching orders, hence
but Sean,
nothing
Sean,
will change.
Even if you're right, because Brad Ausmus, and I mentioned his name and you mentioned his name, and you're right to mention his name. If they're going to fire the manager, he's the next manager. He's managed before. He has experience. It's an easy, and that's what happens. When you fire a manager midseason, most of the time, you're just promoting a bench coach. So I get that, and I think that's the right answer.
See Rob Thompson.
It does it. Exactly. It's not that Brad Ausmus would be different. It's not that someone needs to scream and yell. It's that this team is in quicksand right now, and I think the only thing that could potentially spark them is that kind of major change. It's not that I think the manager is going to be different. It's that maybe that change, maybe even King Aaron Judge, I struggled to get it out, who returns today. Maybe even he would be shook by a move like that. That maybe even veterans would be shook by a move like that. So it's not about saying it's going to be different in terms of style. It's about saying that maybe this team, which I think, and maybe some Yankee fans disagree, I think this roster is a lot better than their record. I'm sorry. This is a 97-win team, in my opinion.
It's still poorly constructed.
Well, it's not perfect, but it's a 97-win team in my mind. You could talk about poorly constructed all you want. They're better than their record. They're better than the way they played. You want to tell me you have an issue that Giancarlo can only DH, and now King Judge has to come back and only DH, and you don't like the construction of that? We can debate it all day. I didn't say they're the 98 Yankees. I said they're better than this. And when you are underachieving, you have to try something. So don't misinterpret my try something with Brad Ausmus's magic. It's more, what else are you going to try? They've tried lineup changes.
Uh-huh.
They've tried adding to this bullpen, which I think is stacked right now. They've tried all sorts of different things. And the only thing I have left, just as an IBO here, is let me try to change the manager. Because I saw the Phillies do it. I saw the Astros do it in 04. They didn't get to the World Series, but bringing in Phil Garner changed things. I saw the Marlins do it. I'll even argue I saw the Mets do it. And I love you, Willie, but the Mets got sparked when they fired Willie Randolph. We don't like to talk about that. We don't mention that because they missed the playoffs. They got sparked. And it wasn't necessarily because Jerry Manuel was different. It wasn't necessarily that Rob Thompson was different. Sometimes a change can shake things up. And I'm struggling to find any other kind of change that the Yankees can execute besides this.
All right. So spark is a key word that you bring up there. It'll spark the team. Are the Yankees still scoring runs more often than not?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes they are. Like, you know what? The reason I give you a convoluted answer is they lost last night. They did nothing in the last seven innings offensively.
Still five. So you five runs with that pitching, you should win a baseball game.
That's fine. They blew the game. But you just said something about their offense. I would tell you from the fifth inning on, their offense was dormant.
Saturday was awful.
What about Saturday? Yeah. Yes, they scored enough runs on Friday, but they're losing in all sorts of different ways. So you want to cite the offense, the pitching, the bullpen? I'll pick every game in which they find a new way to lose.
All right. The reason is they lose this game overwhelming, though, is because they don't play crisp baseball. That base running error by Jazz is one of like 15 moments this year that have happened on the base paths. Heck, it goes back to last year, Sterling running the bases like drunks.
Yeah.
This has existed time and time again. Now, you want to say that's Boone? I think they should practice more fundamentals. That's fine. Anybody who's within that team, Ausmus or not, I don't think firing Boone makes that team stop making those mistakes. As far as some of the pitching decisions go, Aaron Boone putting Devin Williams in the closer role and knowing that he's the fourth best closer on his own team, I think is organizational.
Sean, you're getting lost in the weeds.
No, I'm not. These are the reasons they lose. No. It comes from the top.
Yeah,
until you fire Brian Cashman, no spark is going to happen.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
Okay.
You think anyone in that locker room cares about the general manager?
No, but
the general manager
manages the teams. Let's just say it.
And guess what? The general manager, in my opinion, built a team that's better than what we're seeing on the field. So you want to say I'm taking a paycheck from Brian Cashman? Fine. I actually think he did a good job.
The same general manager who just gave away a top 10 prospect for a guy who had to be sent down to the minors 4 days later.
Stop.
And the same general manager that would have sent down another guy they traded the deadline for Aaron Judge today, if not for an Austin Slater.
That's ridiculous. So you're saying
two of his four acquisitions would have been in the minor leagues today from 5 days ago. That's not on the GM?
No. First of all, you're judging Jake Bird on 5 minutes. They got him partially because he's under team control next year. Think about Waskar Brazoban last year with the Mets.
Well,
but the problem is, you get me in the weeds on this. Because it's not about the weeds of last night's individual move or what happened over the weekend. It's they have been in a malaise since June 13th. Okay?
Boy, do I know it. I understand.
And you know what started on June 13th, this malaise for both the Yankees and the Mets? Tiki being out and me and Sean debating who's the better team in New York, the Mets or the Yankees.
Oh, God.
That's when the malaise started.
I keep forgetting that we did that.
But you got to forget the individual moves. It's the grander picture. He's been here since 2018. While they've had success, like going to the World Series last year, there seems to be this common issue with the lack of fundamentals and the smartness that they play. And so what I'm telling you on August 5th, isn't that Brad Ausmus is perfect or even Brian Cashman's perfect? It's if you don't want to fire the manager because it doesn't fix anything, what would you do? Because other than
I fire the real manager.
They're not doing that in the middle of all. It's not making a difference.
Exactly. They're not doing it. They're not firing Boone either. So we're doing hypotheticals.
But I think it makes more sense. I do. I think it does. And I can see it. Now, Cashman hasn't done this as Yankee GM, but go through baseball history. Good teams that underachieve
spark
their team by firing their manager.
I'm with you typically. I think the Yankees are a different situation.
Why?
Because, first of all, from the post-World Series era to 2018, that Girardi run had a lot of mishaps. I mean, we look gloriously back at Joe Girardi. The common thread is the Yankees started to be a team that was managed from an organizational standpoint. You want to say a spark means what? A spark to fix a team means the Yankees suddenly wake up and stop playing sloppy baseball. I don't believe they're going to wake up and stop playing sloppy baseball.
They all of a sudden woke up and started playing sloppy baseball because for the first 2 months, they didn't play like this.
But they've done this all under the first 2 months last year, too. It's something that clicks with this team. You want to call it a Boone problem? I don't even love Aaron Boone, the manager, but I don't even believe we hear the real Aaron Boone. Until you fire Brian Cashman, firing the manager is not going to spark a team like it did the Phillies. Firing the manager is useless because, unfortunately, he'll take this as a slight. He's not even the real manager.
First of all, he is. Like, you think last night's bullpen decisions are on Brian Cashman? Is that what you think?
I believe Brian Cashman has dictated who the closer of this team is.
I don't believe that. And I know this has been stated over and over again for the last few years. Like, Aaron Boone doesn't make decisions. There's more input from the front office, no question about it. But ultimately, he's deciding who the closer is. He decided to stick with Devin Williams. He also pretty much closed the door on Devin being the closer last night because his words after the game and even today are, we'll talk about it. Well, we'll talk about it means he ain't going to be the closer anymore.
Or we'll talk about it means he's going back to the guy who told him that was his closer and telling him, I can't do this anymore. It's my job.
I don't necessarily believe that. As more hands-on as front offices are, and they certainly are, I don't believe this fictitious story that a lot of people have created that basically Aaron Boone's getting phone calls in the middle of games coming from the general manager. I don't buy it. Now, if you buy that, fine.
You think this lifelong baseball guy doesn't understand fundamentals or wouldn't be willing to send an Anthony Volpe down and wake the team up?
Well, first of all, the general manager's always made that decision on who's on the roster or not.
Exactly.
That's not a new thing.
Exactly.
And that's not why
you don't think if Boone had his preference, Volpe would have been sent down a long time ago? That started it. But he can't bench anybody when Anthony Volpe has to be trotted out there every night.
That's one individual thing. I'm talking about...
It's a trickle-down, dude.
I'm talking about overall the underachievement of this roster, which is better than obviously you think it is. I think that I look at this roster, I say they should win 97 games. They should be better than this. And they've been underachieving for months. And so I'm not opposed at the end of the season to saying, hey, let's reevaluate the whole bad boy and maybe Cashman is gone. Uh-huh. I'm talking about August 5th. August 5th, firing the general manager just gives you blood. It doesn't do anything. Firing the manager can work because there's millions of examples of it. And I don't know what else they can do. Like, they're in quicksand right now. And they're losing games in brutal fashions, night in and night out. And it doesn't mean it is Aaron's fault. It means I gotta try something. If I am the Yankees, if I'm in Brian Cashman's seat, what I'm deciding on this day is I'm not going down without a fight. I went out and traded for bullpen arms. And by the way, last night, at least Bednar and Doval looked pretty damn good.
Yes, they did.
And I believe those are good moves. So I have to try something instead of letting this team sink. And they're sinking. Because the other thing that's going on, and Aaron acknowledged this, is, hey, maybe Friday got to them. Well, what do you think Monday did? They were two outs away from winning, and this fat, out-of-shape, overpaid bum hit a game-tying home run. By the way, when I say fat, out-of-shape bum, those aren't my words. That was the Yankee broadcast team. In fact, would you like to hear a little dig we put together?
Sure.
So last night, as you guys may recall, the Yankees are two outs away from winning. And here comes Jock Peterson. I present to you Ryan Rucco, David Cone, Susan Waldman, all describing Jock Peterson before he hit the game-tying home run.
And I'm hitting 126, two homers, six ribbies all year. He's just having, in this 2 months of the season, he had a broken hand.
You can see the physique definitely has evolved for Jock.
Yeah, he's just had an awful, awful year. He's hitting 126.
Stunning. Those numbers are absolutely stunning from Jock Peterson, who signed a two-year, $20 million deal to come over here, hitting a .126.
And here is Jock Peterson, who has really struggled.
His pitch swung on. Fly ball deep right. Tie ball game. Jock Peterson with a home run ties it at 5-5.
I just want to make it clear. I didn't call him fat. That was Ryan Rucco.
Yeah.
When he talked about his body changing.
He really filled out that uniform.
So that's not on Aaron Boone. unless you didn't want to go to Devin Williams in the ninth inning, which I'm sure a lot of Yankee fans didn't want to do. But when you continue to suffer backbreaking loss after backbreaking loss, and last night is almost on the same level as Friday, you worry if a team can handle that. So what are you going to do other than whine about your general manager? My answer is, I got to shake it up. And I like Aaron, and I don't think he's the problem. But on August 5th, when my team is in quicksand, you got two choices. You can be a spectator and say, fingers crossed, or you can do something about it. And I don't like it. It's not fun coming on the radio suggesting this, but I'm being real to you. Because you've known me for a couple of years, more than that.
Yeah.
I'm not one to just say, fire the coach, fire the manager. I don't do it. I don't do that. But I'm trying to give you an answer on August 5th. Now, you don't want an answer. We could all just sit here and bitch for 4 hours.
No.
We can just do that. And it offers no solution.
I'm giving
you a solution that for some reason, your eyes are so bloodthirsty for Cashman that you can't even think about, well, what does it now?
I just disagree with the fact that firing Brian Cashman wouldn't do anything for the team on August 5th. I think a room full of guys who were acquired by that general manager, who the owner is saying is no longer worthy enough, who's been here for years, sends a message and also maybe allows Aaron Boone to manage the way he wants to manage.
That whole thing, like, you really think he's not being allowed to manage? He's managing.
I think there are certain things he's allowed to do, certain things he's not. I think the idea that on Thursday when they make those acquisitions and we find out after the game Friday that none of those relievers went to sleep before they were thrown into that game and all stunk, I think that he was given his marching orders. We got to show off our new pieces. Got to show off our new pieces.
Oh, stop.
And they imploded.
No, it wasn't show off new pieces. It was, I got these new pieces. Let's try to win a game.
Try to win a game. None of them slept. And he went to all three.
Oh, come on. Now, that's a complaint?
It was what happened.
I understand.
That is what happened.
Sean, that's baseball.
He was told to pitch these guys on no sleep. And they lost the game. That game's on Brian Cashman.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. That's
no,
what happened.
It's not.
That's not even an opinion. That's literally what happened.
Guys don't sleep. It's baseball. There's travel. Brian Cashman supplied Aaron Boone with talent. A much better bullpen. We saw glimpses of that yesterday. They didn't execute. Don't put that on Brian Cashman. You don't even have to put that on Aaron Boone. I'm not picking one move to pile on Boone with. I can find him, like letting Austin Wells hit and not using Ben Rice. Like, I can find
moves. What kind of message does it send to a locker room to bench a guy for forgetting how many outs Austin Wells, getting caught like Jazz, when the entire organization has coddled Anthony Volpe and that home run was looking like, can't believe this guy's not in Scranton
right
now?
Because there's a big difference between ineffective play and having your head up your ass. There's a huge difference.
Oh, I'm sorry. Has Volpe's head not been up you know what in a long time?
Defensive miscues are far different.
Miscues, he leads the league in errors.
I understand. It's not the same as base running gaffes. It's not the same as forgetting how many outs there are. It's just not. Look,
okay. What
do you want to do then? Because your only alternative.
I think firing Cashman wakes him up.
It's not doing any of firing your general manager in August.
Firing the
right
manager,
after he made a bunch of good trades, in my opinion.
Good trades. He had two of the four basically headed for Scranton today.
How did David Bednar look last night?
Bednar looked great.
How did Camilo Duvall look last night?
Duvall looked great.
Okay, I think the Yankees have a stacked bullpen, despite Devin Williams' issues recently. In fact, they could afford to live with Devin Williams being buried because their bullpen is so good now. So you putting that on Cashman's ridiculous.
He could have traded Devin Williams and took that decision out of Aaron Boone's hands. Didn't do that.
Not fair.
Not fair.
No, because their
we've all been saying it.
Their best option was for him to still be here.
Oh, what a great option, Evan. 5 runs in his last 6 outings.
He's struggling.
Guy stinks.
He's struggling.
Pete Alonso broke him. He stinks.
The Yankees, to me, after all the shortcomings in the playoffs, Aaron Judge not being able to hit, how just the free fall that they're experiencing right now. Even if they do make it, I don't see them doing much with it, even in an American league that's lesser than the National League. I mean, they just seem lifeless. I mean, and the Mets do too, right? And they lost 7 out of 8, I think. I'm not excusing them, but I mean, the Yankees are in a worse situation. Mets are what, 12 games over right now still?
Yeah, I understand that. Once you fall under 10 games over and your starts free falling like the Yankees.
Like the Yankees are 6 games over.
That's what I'm saying. Like, once you get under 10 games over 500, then it's time, you know, I don't say panic, but worry. However you want to describe it, now all of a sudden you're thinking, what the hell is just going on with this team? And, you know, there's a bunch of really good guys in this team. I just don't understand. And again, a lot of this, these games are tight. And Devin Williams is coming in and he's losing these games. Part of that is all on him. And it's all on Aaron Boone putting him in those situations. I think after last night's game, I think they're going to be thinking differently now. That there's no way that they're going to be putting him in situations.
I thought you meant thinking differently about the manager.
No. They better not. Well, the manager better. First of all, the manager's got to go to the, you know, whoever, the analytics gurus, the coaches, you know, Brian Cashman, say, Brian, look, man, I can't bring this guy out here anymore. I mean, he is killing us. And by the way, we're not supporting him either. We're not giving him bigger cushions. We're not giving him 3, 4, 5 run leads. We're giving him 1 run leads or we're tied, and we're putting him in these games, and he is killing us. And everybody can see that. Now, there are 9 other players that have to hit, that have to put runs on the board, that have to play defense. You know, those are other issues that, you know, we have discussed over and over and over again. And I'm telling you right now, if they do not make the playoffs, they do not make a deep run, they do not get back to the World Series, I'm telling you, Aaron Boone's going to be fired.
Well, yeah, at the end of the season. Well, at the end of the season,
yeah, he's not going to get fired now. But yeah, I agree with you in terms of that, you know. And the other thing, too, is, quite frankly, at least, you know, we've heard from Steve Cohen over the last couple of years in the midst of downturns where he still has positivity, still has confidence in his team. We've heard that from the owner. And we've also heard that from, you know, their manager. Now, on the other side, we've heard it from Aaron Boone over and over and over again. And a lot of those words, unfortunately for him, are starting to ring hollow. And when they ring hollow, somebody else has got to come in. And somebody else has got to take a little bit of the pressure off of the manager. That guy, if it's not Brian Cashman, then it's Hal Steinbrenner. Because Hal Steinbrenner is getting roasted right now. He is getting roasted. Now, you can't compare him to his dad. I'm not doing that. But he's just MIA. Like, it's like everything's okay. But where is the owner to sit here and put his foot down and tell these players, look, man, it's time to wake up and it's time to start playing.
He's not the guy, though. You've heard him talk. He's not the guy to come out and represent the team in the media. He's not the guy to walk into the clubhouse to turn it around. I mean, there is no personality there that is capable of doing that. I mean, Brian Cashman could be feisty if there's someone who wants to step up. And, you know, we play the clips all the time. You know, we suck right now and we're unwatchable and things like that. He takes ownership. He says those things, you know, when they struggle. Hal Steinbrenner's not the guy to do that. And also, I do think, I mean, there is something to be said about when the manager is taking, because everybody's getting flack. Aaron Boone's getting the most. And when the manager gets
Evan Williams.
Well, but I'm talking about the, you know, certainly the
hierarchy.
Right. So Aaron Boone's getting the most. So now if you fire the manager, then all of a sudden, if the team continues to underachieve, then it falls all at the feet of the general manager, which is, okay, well, maybe the manager couldn't do anything because the team you put together stinks. So sometimes the general managers like to use the managers or the head coaches as a shield for as long as they can, saying, oh, we're underachieving because of this guy. But then all of a sudden, if you bring in another guy and he also underachieves, then all of a sudden there's only one spotlight and it's right on the face of the guy who put the team together.
You know, and there really should only be one spokesperson when it comes to the players. I know the players have to answer questions after the game, and that's fine. But those questions, or if they are asked of, a young player like Ben Rice, all Ben Rice should just say is, I'm worried about I gotta play better. I have to do my job. I have to make sure that I have a positive impact on the team, as opposed to talking about what he thinks the whole team needs to do. Like, you haven't been here long enough to be talking like that. You know, and I know you're trying to say the right thing. I know you're trying to give the answer to the media because they're peppering you guys with questions left and right. But there has to be a leader, and that's Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is the one that's got to give, from the player's perspective, what he believes needs to be done. And I'm sure he would say the right thing a million times over. I would never expect him ever to say anything that's going to be controversial. But it's just like, Anthony Volpe owns up to the errors. Anthony Volpe owns up to his strikeouts. I mean, he stands in front of the camera. He stands in front of the microphone. He answers the questions. You know, he's not the, you know, $30 million player. He's not the grizzled vet that should be answering a question as to why the team is struggling. He can answer a question as to why he's struggling. But the captain's got to be more vocal, especially now. I mean, these two teams right now look dead. And I know the Mets have more padding, but it is, you know, last night was just like, all right, get up there, swing. There's no competitive desire, it doesn't feel like, when you're losing games this way and you're not scoring runs and you're just rolling over on the first pitch and hitting into second base, man on second, let's just ground out to the pitcher. I mean
there's 14 straight batters retired by Guardians pitching to end the game. I mean, and there's nothing that makes a team look dead less than more than that is when you just 14 straight outs to end the game at home with that lineup and those guys in there.
The other day, Keith Hernandez was talking about how great it is to play at Citi Field now that, you know, it's basically getting huge crowds, the fans are into it, and the players are not responding. And, you know, earlier in the season when they were responding and they were playing well, remember all the post-game interviews with Steve Gelbs on the field?
Mm-hmm.
This is great. We got the greatest fans. Everything's awesome. You know, our team's playing great. We're all hanging in there. Everybody's contributing. You remember all those?
Well, you know what I remember more was the fact that they were telling the fans to show up to the game because the building was empty towards the end of the year. They were begging fans, Brandon Nimmo, going, hey, we're in a pennant race here, guys. We want you to show up to the field.
Well, last year, yeah.
Last year, that's what I remember more than anything. This year, they're there. And they're playing like crap, you know, late in the season. Last year, the fans weren't there, and the team was on this unbelievable run. This year, they are there, and now they're having their struggles here.
So let me say this for the fans, to the players of the New York Mets, the managers, the coaching staff, the ownership. We're showing up. We need you to show up.
Yeah.
That's basically what's going on here. And, you know, this again, I kind of feel like we're going to get back into this body language question.
Juan Soto, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, Mitt, you got it.
I don't care what he looks like. I honestly just win some games for us with your bat. I'm not going to sit there and try to psychologically dissect whether or not he's in a good mood or not. I can't. I'm not doing that. But I wouldn't be looking like I was in a good mood if I was having the season that he was having, getting paid $765 million. Like, I'd be pissed off, too. But turn that pissed off emotion into some all-star play, which he hasn't been able to do. Jason Stony Brook wants to talk some Yankees this morning. What's up, Jason? Good morning. How are you?
Fellas, great show as always. I want to chime in here with the Yankees. I understand Boone's not going to get fired, Cashman's not going to get fired, but to me, the handwriting's been on the wall since the World Series. The sloppy play, too much musical chairs with the players. I mean, one day Ben Rice is at first base and the next day he's catching. I mean, Dominguez was supposed to be the Martians, unbelievable center fielder for the future, and he can't catch the ball in field. There's an organizational problem here. And I'll tell you know, George Steinbrenner is rolling around his grave. I mean, does his son have a pulse? Can he say something? Fire the guys up? I mean, this is ridiculous already. And, you know, I understand Jazz Chisholm got called out by Boone, but he also spit in his face after the game when he said he would do the same thing again. I mean, he's hot-dogging you on the bases. Austin Wells, I mean, wake up. You're the catcher of the team, and you got tagged out because you thought there were three outs, whatever it was. I mean, this is it's getting ridiculous. It's not just the fans are out to get Boone, and here we go again. You know, it's too much already. It really is. I mean, every guy Cashman gets, it's like, oh, he's the greatest GM ever. To me, he's the most overrated. Every time the Yankees are doing well, it's because they went and signed a big-ticket free agent or got Soto on the team or Gerrit Cole. This guy puts a Band-Aid on everything. And, I mean, how many bullpen guys do we need back there?
Well, Jason, let me just say one thing, okay? You know, when you lost Soto to the Mets and they weren't going to give him $765 million, we know that. They went plan B, and they brought in the best pitcher available, Max Fried. He was supposed to be 1-2 with Gerrit Cole. They didn't know that Gerrit Cole's elbow was going to go, you know, get blown out. They bring in Bellinger, who's had a really good year. They bring in Goldschmidt. Goldschmidt, all right, towards the end of his career, maybe not great, but not bad either. You know, the frustration with the Anthony Volpe errors, yes, we all see that. We all talk about that. We all ad nauseum want something to be done about that. And all these little mental errors that you just pointed out. Now, saying all of that, this is a team that usually wins over 100 games. This is a team that went to the World Series just last year.
Yeah, I mean...
I'd be like, if these people sometimes act as if, like, you know, George Steinbrenner's not alive, so stop with that. I'm tired of that.
Yeah, I know. That's one of those things.
And you know what? What he created, yeah, he ended up having Joe Torre for 10 years. That's called stability. That's not calling, like, you know, calling up Billy Martin and bringing Billy Martin back five different times. You know, that's stability, and that's why they won. And they did have a core four of younger players, but they always added free agents. Or they made trades, whether it be Paul O'Neill, Scott Brosius, Wade Boggs, Roger Clemens. How many of these, like, mercenaries had they brought in here?
Yeah, I mean, well, there is one thing about preaching patience with Aaron Boone as opposed to Joe Torre. Joe Torre did win a World Series his first year as manager.
Right.
So, I mean, that buys you a little time.
They went to the World Series and then, last year, for God's sake.
I know.
And you want to know what? The Dodgers embarrassed them, just like the Royals embarrassed the Mets back in 2015. They played solid, fundamental baseball, and the Yankees couldn't keep up with it.
Yeah, and I just don't like the assumption that if Aaron Boone were screaming at these guys or George Steinbrenner were still alive, that that would make a Yankee team better. We don't know that.
It doesn't work that way.
I mean, they may be worse because of that.
It doesn't, especially in baseball, it doesn't work that way. Now, I will say, he took Jazz Chisholm down in the dugout, and he spoke with him, just like A.J. Hinch spoke with Javi Baez. You know, I'm sure that Aaron Boone had words with Austin Wells. I guarantee you he did. I think he's trying to help Anthony Volpe because of his youth and experience, and he's dealing with a little adversity during his time here. So I think you handle him a little bit differently just because of his age.
Yeah, and I just, yeah. Everything that's building up towards, it's everybody's remembering things and now applying it to the present. And it feels like it's a nightmare for a Yankee fan that expects more. So when we say they're at the World Series, and this is devil's advocate here,
okay,
because
they made
the World Series.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you.
Right, I'm just saying this is the devil's advocate situation. Yeah, they made it to the World Series. But we talked about how the American League was a cakewalk last year, and then they didn't seem like they could even compete with the Dodgers, and they have this sloppy, embarrassing game that eliminates them. And then they come back, and now there's errors all over the place, dumb things on the base paths. Yeah, Boone took Chisholm down there, but as the caller said, I mean, Jazz Chisholm also says after that I wouldn't do anything differently. So did Aaron Boone really get through to him? I mean, I guess not. So, and then you see, you know, guys like Gleyber Torres, who they were frustrated with, Gary Sanchez. Now you got another young guy who comes up who, you know, is making these errors all over the place, although his offense has been very, very good. So it just feels like the same story over and over again for a Yankee fan that wants to see and wants to believe that they're rooting for a championship team, which they don't believe that today. And they think it's gotten worse. It hasn't gotten better. It's gotten worse than last year.
Right. And the other thing that Aaron Boone has got to be careful of is you can't change your stripes. You can't change who you are in the middle of something, in the middle of adversity. Because if you do, it's going to be disingenuous, and the players will definitely stop listening to you. So what Aaron Boone has to do, whether people like it or not, and it's required from all coaches, from Aaron Glenn to Brian Daboll, you know, to Luis Mendoza, to all of these guys, they have to remain genuine. They have to remain consistent. So what you hear in a post-game press conference is not what he's saying to the players. I'm just telling you. And I'm not saying that he's screaming and yelling at the players, but he is enhancing and trying to tell the players we need to play with more attitude. We have to be more aware of what's going on and not allow these mistakes to happen, because he knows exactly how we're going to react and how the fans are going to react.
Yeah, I mean, from his perspective, Aaron Boone is that, you know, he's been a very successful manager. Yes, they have not won a World Series, but look at his regular season record. It's one of the best of the last number of years of any manager. And he's thinking, my approach has worked.
I'll tell you, the problem is, like, you know, Friday night was such a
disaster. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
You got these three new fresh arms who probably really weren't that fresh. I'm going to imagine they all flew in immediately to Miami because they wanted to get there. They wanted to put on the uniform. I'm sure all three of those guys were so excited to hear that they got traded to the Yankees.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And then all of a sudden, Friday night develops, and that was such a Met-esque type of thing when you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, true. I mean,
three new relievers.
Just getting walloped.
And putting them out there because you don't want to overuse the guys that you've already had there,
mm-hmm.
that you still have there, because they needed a day off. And I heard some of the conversations over the weekend where people are sick and tired of hearing about these scheduled days off. You know, that is not the manager, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
That's the front office.
Yeah,
that's not the manager. The manager, I will say, is the one that decides who's going to be the next pitcher up and with in consultation with his pitching coach and figuring out how many pitches somebody threw 2 days ago. I mean, these are all part and parcel of the game of baseball now as we know it. And we may not like it. Some of us older folks don't like it. You know, we'd rather see guys out there pitching, you know, 7-8 innings and throwing 120 pitches. But that's just not the way it is anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of my arguments about the load management in the NBA. Yes, there were some players who decided they'd take off. It was a LeBron James or something like that. But I do think there's other players that would have wanted to play. And the organization was saying, no, we're going to keep you out of this game, keep you out of that game, to be able to be fresher in the playoffs. But then everyone would scream at the players for not playing when it was the organization telling them not to play.
Or if you're the Knicks, you just play them too much.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I mean, like,
yeah.
You can't win. Yeah. You can't win because there's two sides to every argument, and people will sit here and they will give you those arguments. Look, I'm actually jealous of Yankee fans because their teams are always winning. I mean, I know they're not always winning a World Series. The Dodgers don't always win a World Series, and they spend a godload, you know, with their consortium.
Well, yeah, I mean, this was the first real World Series they had won with the consortium. Obviously, they won the COVID World Series, but...
I mean, what was about L.A. and COVID championships?
Yeah, it's true. It's a weird one. And then remember, like, Justin Turner went out when he had COVID and, like, took a team picture, and everybody thought he was, like, Satan for doing that. Remember that whole deal?
I do remember that whole deal, and I remember how idiotic the whole thing was. But nothing more idiotic than the Nets, the New York City, and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, well.
And that took the cake of being, and I'm not saying Kyrie was idiotic. I'm saying the way that New York City handled it and allowed players from other teams to come in and play if they were not vaccinated, but their own team couldn't.
Right.
Yeah. That is about as...
Yeah.
Jackassery as it gets.
Evan and Tiki on the Fan. The other day, in response to another Yankee loss, I really thought that if the Yankees wanted to spark this team, they'd fire the manager. I never thought they would fire the manager.
Yeah.
But I understand why it would make a lot of sense. And as I'm watching Yankees-Rangers on a Wednesday afternoon, dueling afternoon baseball games, it felt like a game. And I'll never get to be proven right about this, but it felt like a game that if they lost, I could see us sitting here on a Thursday afternoon talking about Boone being fired.
Yeah.
Now, we never got that answer because credit to the Yankees, they won this game. But I want to take you back specifically to the ninth inning because I'm going to raise my hand and be honest. When Aaron Boone went out to talk to David Bednar after he put back-to-back guys on base with this little slim lead and he's now thrown a million pitches, I thought, you got to take him out. Got to take him out.
Yeah.
To me, it's a no-brainer. He's not used to throwing this many pitches. I was going back into his history. How often has he ever thrown this many pitches?
42?
42.
Right.
For a closer. Now, he's gotten 4 and 5 out saves, but how many times has he thrown that many pitches? And, you know, you witness the bottom of the ninth inning in which he gives up the walk. I know they were all close, but he still walks Corey Seager. He gives up the base hit to Simeon. And I'm thinking, I got to get him out. And when Boone turned back to keep him in, I said out loud, he's going to lose his job. If Adolis Garcia...
Because of how he managed
it.
Right.
And I think everybody who's now waxing poetic about the move, I think would have Monday morning quarterbacked the hell out of it because I think it was the wrong move, but it worked.
Wrong move to leave him in and trust him because you don't know him.
Right.
David Bednar's been there for a week. And so how do you know when he says, I got this? I'm good.
And Jack Curry said something after the game. He's so right. Biggest game David Bednar has ever come into.
Yeah.
That is not hyperbolic. It's
That's
true.
Interesting. And this is the last time since 2022, I believe, 23. When did you say, Rami? 23 or so? He pitched 42 pitches?
2022.
Long time ago.
I mean, it's been 3 years since he's had to do that. And even on the broadcast, they were talking about how Aaron Boone was so reluctant to allow him to go five outs. To get five outs because it's hard for closers to do that. But I mean, at the same time, he proved why you go and get David Bednar. He proved, unlike with Devin Williams, that in that moment, even if trouble finds its way, he puts traffic on the bases, he's gonna find a way out of it.
And all Aaron Boone could do, let's be honest, was trust him. All he could do was pray.
Once he, well, he didn't have to. He could have gone to Camilo Duvall.
Okay, and? Predictably, we know it would have happened.
Oh, I disagree. I'm being fair. In the moment conversation, obviously the game has been over. The Yankees won. Great job by Bednar. I thought David Bednar was giving up a three-run home run.
Yeah, but see,
1,000%.
See, I didn't. I didn't because I felt like he was in control. I felt like he knew exactly where he wanted to place every pitch.
Despite the fact that with two outs and nobody on, he gave up back-to-back base runners?
Okay, well, the hit, it is what it is.
Cheap, I get it.
The walk, I mean.
That was absurd. That was a strikeout.
And so,
it wasn't
like he was missing wildly. And if he's missing wildly and it's not even close, it's like.
But that makes it worse. He's had 41 pitches, and he just gave up a walk in which all of the pitches were at least reasonably close.
Right.
By the way, even the strikes weren't really strikes. And if you go back and look at that at-bat, like, he could have walked him on four pitches. But whatever. I'm just telling you my honest in-the-moment thought was this is going to end badly, and I wanted the fresher pitcher to come in and get the last out. Here's the point. Aaron Boone wins. The Yankees win. If he was wrong about this... What are we saying? What are you saying on your wrap-up show?
I got to be real. Yeah, I would have went nuts that... Because in real time, this is what I thought. I jumped out of my chair when I saw him leave him in the game in pumped upness.
Really?
Because to me, it was a message, binders be damned. You allowed a pitcher to talk to you and stay in the game. Our biggest issue with Aaron Boone is punching up the calculations of what it tells you to do.
They probably don't have it on David Bednar yet.
And this also followed a move where Boshi was begging them to pinch hit early in the game with their lefties. He didn't do it. He waited. Ended up paying off going to Goldie later. It felt like Aaron Boone yesterday managed with instinct. Now, also, he didn't have a great answer if he took Bednar out of the game. You brought up Duvall. It would have been three straight days, and he didn't really want to do that anyway.
One batter, though.
Okay.
Potentially one batter.
But
with an off day.
Let's play the what-if game. We all, I think with our two eyes, saw Bednar did have control despite those two runners. If he takes him out there and goes to Duvall, who is tired and gives up a bomb, then what are we saying? I think you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I think if Bednar gave it up there, our frustration is going to be, I cannot believe the umpire didn't call that a strike, two batters early, and we're screaming and yelling about that. And I think for once, we'd be proud that Boone allowed a pitcher to talk him into it.
Yeah, and Boone, apparently, because this is what he said after the game, was he came out there to take him out. And... I don't know exactly what the conversation was, but he left him in.
No.
Well, so you give him credit for it.
He went out there with an open mind, because if he was going out there to take him out, he would have signaled to take him out. So I think Aaron Boone went out there saying, look, I don't know David Bednar that well.
Yeah, but how often does Aaron Boone do that?
Go out there without signaling?
Yeah.
It's not often, but it's happened, but not like that.
It's not an often thing. I'd have to score that for you and let you know. But I think when you're the manager and you go out there without signaling, you're either talking strategy or you're saying, let me look into the man's eyes. Now, here's the great thing about David Bednar. So the other day when you were in here, I said to Sean, okay, you don't want Devin Williams as the closer. Cool. Who should be the closer? And he was passionate. It should be Luke Weaver. And my answer was, look, David Bednar and Camilo Duvall are fine closers. We don't know enough about them yet. Mm-hmm. We haven't looked into their soul
exactly.
yet. Well, we had a chance to look into David Bednar's soul yesterday afternoon, and I think we got our answer. That's the guy. Credit to him. I'm wrong, because I would have taken him out. But credit to him. I think he has taken that job and that role for now.
Now, here's the question. Do you think it will be given to him?
I think so.
But it's not going to be given. Here's the problem.
I think so.
And your problem is the problem.
The problem is...
What you're about to say is the problem.
On Friday night, tomorrow night, if the Yankees are in a save situation with a lead over the Astros, Bednar's not getting the ball in the ninth inning because he just threw 41 pitches.
Yeah, tomorrow's a little shaky, but certainly Saturday, Sunday, with a fresher bullpen, I would assume more times than not he's getting the
ball. But what if Duvall comes in and closes out a game for us?
So where are you going? You going Duvall or you're going Devin Williams?
Well, we haven't had the chance yet to fully look in a Camilo Duvall soul. So we'll see.
Yeah.
It's a soul check for him. But for David Bednar, that was a soul-building moment. Like, you're a Yankee fan. You've probably seen the guy pitch three times in your entire life because he's on the Pirates. How often are you watching him? You saw him yesterday, and he earned it.
He did.
He earned the trust for now.
And he has the potential to give the Yankees their first true awesome closer entrance since Mariano Rivera.
Why?
Sticks renegade from his lifelong Steeler fandom. Oh, the doors open, the lights go out. Oh, mama, I'm in fear for my life. That is going to tickle Yankee fans. Sign me up.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. That's big time. That's Enter Sandman level.
I got a feeling.
Now, do you do that for every reliever?
Well, the Yankees basically do it for all of them now. But ones, it's Dreamweaver. Yeah. Remember, it was Whitehorse for Clay Holmes.
The problem I think we've run into in baseball is every closer has an entrance, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a thing. Like, Yoan Duran has a great entrance.
But what if you're not the actual closer?
That's what I'm about to get to. So all the closers have an entrance. It makes sense, right?
Of course.
Then the trade deadline comes, and the closers get traded to a team where they're not closing. Ryan Helsley has one of the most beloved entrances in baseball, too. Do you want to guess what he comes out to?
I have no idea.
Helsley.
Oh, Hell's Bells?
Hell's Bells.
All right, of course.
Which was, of course, the Trevor Hoffman special.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there for it. It's cool. Mm-hmm. But it's to Tiki's point. He's not the closer. Like, when does it become overkill with these guys getting entrances? I think the situation of the game kind of matters.
Right.
You got to come into the right spot. Like, Helsley came into a tie game in the ninth inning, which is basically a closer situation. So it was like, tie game in the 10th inning, yeah, which is basically a closer situation. So it's like, okay, that one makes sense.
And he got the Hell's Bells?
He got the Hell's Bells?
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Did you notice what Bednar came into on the road yesterday? Maybe this is only where I come through.
I had the game
ears
on mute, so I couldn't even guess.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The game gets tight. They call a timeout. Right. Well, whatever. For baseball person, Bednar comes in. Narco, Edwin Diaz's song. Thanks. The Rangers were blaring to get their crowd up. That's funny.
Hey, works both ways sometimes.
Now, time for Bold Face Lie, Bold Face Truth with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata.
Oh, yeah. All right, little Bold Face Lie, Bold Face Truth. Hoppy, what do you have for us today?
All right, so I have yet to see the movie, but I'm going to see it very soon. Naked Gun looks fantastic. Liam Neeson.
What's the actual title of it?
The Naked Gun.
That's it. Okay. There's no like 33 and a third or.
No.
Okay.
2.5. Yeah, no, okay. Nothing right like that. Not yet. Okay. Not yet. But this leads me into the question or the statement. Bald-faced lie, bald-faced truth. Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson will get married before the sequel to The Naked Gun comes out.
I'm going to say, I mean, they do seem to be in love.
They seem to be very much in love. And you know Liam Neeson's situation, right?
Yes, like, his wife passed away on Forge. Was that the ski accident?
Yeah.
I know.
That was like almost 20 years ago.
What was his wife's name? She was an actress. She was in, what the hell was she in that I liked?
A great actress.
Was she the mother in the Parent Trap? I think that she was, if I'm not mistaken.
Remember Richardson.
Okay, remember the Parent Trap with Lindsay Lohan?
Yes.
I believe Natasha Richardson was the mother in the Parent Trap.
Yes, you're right. Okay. 1998. You're
yes,
correct.
That's where I remember her from. But she passed away in that ski accident, and he was, you know, obviously devastated. I don't know if he's dated or whatever since then, but this is the most first time.
No, he hasn't. This is like a thing. Like he hasn't had a relationship since he passed away.
And Pam is like a new version of Pam Anderson. She's
a new version?
Well,
virgin?
Version.
Oh. Okay.
Version of herself, where I think she wears less makeup, if any.
Yes.
And she's not, you know, dating Tommy Lee.
Yeah.
You remember that?
I remember. Oh,
yeah.
Who doesn't remember Tommy?
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, all right, you remember that.
That was my first experience in adult.
Yeah, no, I get it. I think that there's true love there. I really do. So I'm going to say that is a bald face truth. They get married before the sequel of The Naked Gun. Remember, I don't even know if there's going to be a sequel. I think they're going to get married.
And I think there should be a sequel, even though I haven't watched it yet. But I
heard it's great, and the preview for it was good. I'm going to see it. If not this weekend, I'm going to go see it next week. I have some time coming off, a couple of days. I think next week I'm going to go see it one of those days.
Yeah, I have my family's going to go away in a week, so I'm looking
there
forward to doing nothing
but
hanging with myself. So I'll watch that then.
Do you know how long the movie is?
What's the runtime?
Because even Happy Gilmore, which I enjoyed, it's like 2 hours. No, dude, come on. 140. A comedy should not be longer than 140. Really,
yeah,
it should
but
be 120.
It's about the experience now. They need to give you a whole full experience.
I don't need 2 hours.
Well, how about this? An hour 25. They're not even giving you a full
movie. Gun?
Yeah.
Bingo, there you go.
That's a Netflix special.
An hour and 40 goes on too long. 120, you could be good. That's a good comedy right there.
I don't know.
I wish Happy Gilmore was 120. Less cameos and you know, shorter time.
Dude, how do we not know this? You know who's in the film?
Who?
Cody Rhodes.
What?
How did you not know that?
How did you not know that?
I didn't do any research.
You know, when Stern has a big guest on, Baba Booey comes up with or Hein, they hit him with the Hein, they come up with those questions. I had no idea Cody Rhodes was in The Naked Gun.
Yeah, he's the third person on this list to cast, and Busta Rhymes, too, but, well, yeah.
Can we get Busta on to talk about it?
I'll work on that. That's the next guest.
I wish I would have known that with Cody. We had him in here for a while. We could have got to the Naked Gun. Anyway.
All right.
What do you got? Next one.
All right. Bald-faced truth, bald-faced lie. Serious question.
Mm-hmm.
BT will watch 15% of the Jets preseason games. Bald-faced truth, bald-faced lie. 15%.
Well, he's going to be on vacation for this first one. I think he's going to go back and watch them. I will say that is a bald-faced truth. He is going to watch more than 15% of the preseason games.
No.
You think that's a lie, huh?
Yeah, I think there's no training. I think he sees the opening drives for each game.
Something you can watch the highlights. Oh, yeah, right. I see what you're saying. Watch
Justin
Fields.
Opening drive, and then that's it. That's
well, I mean, it's a good question. I used to be more into it, but that was when preseason mattered more. Now it's like preseason really is irrelevant. It used to be, okay, maybe the first week a little bit, definitely the second week a little bit, and then a lot of the third week, and then none of the fourth week. Now it's like there are only 3 weeks, right, of preseason.
Right, it's just 3 weeks, and there's one game where they don't start any starters.
Anybody, right? So I'm sorry, like as much as I'll be into it, and I am actually excited. I put it on my to-do list. Ooh, here we go, Saturday, Giants-Jets, preseason games, baby. You're going to be traveling with the Giants
in
Buffalo.
I'll be in Buffalo, yeah.
Which will be interesting, by the way, because the Bills are on Hard Knocks, which starts tonight. But either way, the Giants will be featured on that, I'm sure, as the opponent against the Bills. I just, as much as I want to get into it and I watch it, by the time anybody that's relevant is out of the game, I lose interest.
No, and actually, to be honest with you, Saturday?
Yeah.
It's a 1 o'clock game.
Giants is
Saturday
one.
One. Like who's watching
in the
that?
Summer?
Yeah,
no, I'm out. Well, I'll DVR it, and then if I feel like it, I'll go back and watch.
Yeah, you're not taking in 90% of that game. You're barely taking in 50%.
No, if that, it will be. And remember too, there's baseball going on. Like my ideal Saturday in the summer is maybe a little barbecue, definitely by the pool, and then listen to the ball games.
There you go.
That would be my not preseason football week one.
Honestly, I had a party over the weekend, and that's actually what we did. We had a house party, and we had both TVs on. So we had the Mets and Yankee game on, but we were listening to Susan and Dave Sims on the radio as well. And that was just awesome.
I actually listen to games quite a bit because I'm either in the car, especially running errands or whatever. Or like I said, in the backyard, I'll listen to a lot more games during the summer than
normal. Yeah, no, it's awesome. It's great. Now, listen, last one. Bald-faced lie, bald-faced truth. It's a difficult question. I don't know how you're going to go with this, or a statement.
Yeah.
Aaron Boone will outlast Brian Daboll as head coach for their respective teams. Bald-faced lie, bald-faced truth.
That may be one of the best you've had. I'm going to say that it's a bald-faced lie. Now, I'm not saying that I think the expiration date is coming at the end of the year for Boone. Even if they miss the playoffs, I still need to see it to believe it. And for the record, if the Yankees pull the stunt of missing the postseason and firing Boone and making him the scapegoat, it's wrong. It's incorrect. If they clean house, can't argue. If it's just Boone as the scapegoat, that is absurd. I'm not sure that that's going to be the case, but let's just say that they make the playoffs, Boone's safe. I believe that the Giants made their decision to commit to Daboll last year. We've talked about that a lot. When you draft Jackson Dart and you put the pieces in place this year, and I was thinking, I've been giving this a lot of thought as I start to get ready in football mode. I don't care about the schedule with the Giants. I believe in Daboll. I've had this argument with BT last year. Same thing. Throughout the course of the year, he's like, well, what do you believe on? And each week it gets harder and harder to back Daboll and the Giants because they were giving us nothing. But at my core, I believe Brian Daboll is a good football coach. He's got to show it. The results have to be there. But I think the Maras, well, the ownership with the Giants as well, they're going to be patient at least for another 2 years with Daboll. I think even if they don't have great success this year, 5-6 win season, whatever it may be, I still believe Daboll will be here beyond this year. And I do think that he'll turn it around eventually. Whereas with Boone, I don't think he's getting past the 10-season mark. And this is already 8 seasons. Unless he wins a championship, I have a hard time thinking he's going to be here beyond that. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they're both here for the next 10 years. But no, I think it's a bold-faced lie. I think Daboll will outlast Boone at this point.
And do you follow up to that, do you think that Boone goes with Cashman or it's two different things?
I think they're probably going to separate it. What would be nice if they did it. Now, again, nice, you want to see wins, right? I'm not trying to be... I love Boone. I told you. I want Boone to be the manager forever. Love Aaron Boone. And I don't think this is his fault. There are two separate things here. This is not Boone's fault. And personally, I'd love to see him be the manager forever. However, when your team plays as poorly as they have played, there's got to be some level of accountability. I would have fired both Cashman and Boone just saying, hey, time for a change. Time for a change with Cashman, Boone collateral damage in 2021. So I understand if the organization were to do that. I don't understand the split. I understand moving on from both if they fail and don't make the postseason. But I think Cashman is going to probably be allowed to go out on his own. And that doesn't seem like it's going to be too far down the road. He may just one day say, you know what, I don't want to be the GM anymore. I don't know what role he's going to take. And then at that point, it's going to be easier for them to maybe move on from Boone. Could be 2 years, could be three. I have no idea.
Do you think he lays the axe on Boone and then says, hey, by the way, I'm out. See you.
No.
Have a good night, everybody.
I do not believe Brian Cashman thinks that Aaron Boone has done anything wrong. And he's right. He hasn't. I mean, nobody's perfect. But this is by design. You know, the Yankees issue, this is not a managerial issue. Has he been great? Has everybody loved the way that he's handled everything? No. But this is a culture issue. It is a roster construction issue. This is not get rid of the manager and a new manager, players, manager, hard ass, whatever, is going to be the savior. That is not. If you think that's the case with this Yankee team, you're not paying attention. They are not firing a manager away from being good. These are inherent problems. Is it Boone's fault that these guys aren't ready to play when they get to the big leagues? That's an organizational thing. How many high-end prospects have to fail before we realize, hey, maybe the Yankees organization doesn't know what they're doing and they're not doing it the right way? That's on the manager?